Hi, it's Grace, and this is a special series of Frogmore Stew called Meal Prep. The politicians that run our state government are essentially the ingredients that make up the stew that is our state. And by getting to know each of the folks running for State House and State Senate, we hope to offer you a window into what we as the voters will determine the final recipe to be. Caitlin, TJ, and I took on the task of interviewing as many of the people running for those seats as we could. The interviews offer us a more personal look at the variety of people who want us to send them to Columbia. We learned a lot. We hope you do too.
I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep.
Today I am with John Moffitt, who is running for State House District 110. John, welcome to Frogmore Stew.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk to you.
Can you tell us where your district is, what it covers?
I am running for State House District 110, which encompasses downtown south of Calhoun Street.
Yep.
It encompasses a large portion of Mount Pleasant, up the river Hopcaw, Ion, almost all the way to 526, and then cuts down through the Old Village. And then on the other side of the peninsula, there's a chunk of James Island and then a sliver of West Ashley.
The portion of West Ashley and James Island, those were added after the last census.
So
is that right?
When my opponent, Tom Hartnett, first ran 2 years ago, that was the first election where they had the new lines.
And to be clear, he's the Republican incumbent, and then you're running as a Democrat, and there's no primary in this election. It's a general election, Republican-Democrat.
There's no primary on either side.
And this is the seat that William Cogswell held.
Yes. Mayor Cogswell was in this seat for, I believe, 6 or 8 years before he ran for mayor in 2023. Now, from what I understand, you'd have to check me on this, is that the current representative, Tom Hartnett, was planning on primarying Mayor Cogswell from the right. There's probably less daylight between William Cogswell and I than there is between Tom Hartnett and William Cogswell. And that's something I hope to elevate and amplify to the voters.
And that district in 2020 had a 60% Republican voting rate, and in 2022, 54%. And One of the things that I'm always interested in with that district is it's 53% women. So the abortion stuff is really important, I would imagine, in your district. Have you gotten that vibe from talking to constituents?
Yes, the abortion issue is absolutely top of mind for everybody that I've talked to. It gets the most reaction from statements that I make, things I put on social media, across the board. I am the product of the women in my life. I have 4 older sisters. I have a loving and strong mother. My wife is my rock, and I owe everything to her. I mentioned to you, Grace, before earlier that my wife and I are expecting our first kid in September, a baby girl. So I say all this to say that this is not an issue that we as men or we as legislators, anybody but the expecting mother of a child, should be making. It's not our choice to make. And I believe that when you start to remove the freedoms of women from a society, that's a society that's destined to fail. And if it were up to me, I would snap my fingers and I would repeal the 6-week abortion ban right away. Now, there are other issues, obviously, that have to do that are very important to people in this district. I encompass a lot of the local issues into what I call just the livability issue. And by that, prices are way too high, both from a real estate perspective and otherwise. And our city is flooding at a higher rate than ever before. The flooding piece is no longer just an inconvenience. It's a real threat to life. I've heard story after story of people who couldn't get emergency services to their house because a road was flooded. And then on the affordability standpoint, we are on par with the New Yorks of the world. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
We were lucky that we were able to buy a house, but that reality is just not attainable for so many people, particularly young people in South Carolina. And it goes beyond just real estate. We have high energy prices. We are one of the states in the nation that does not provide childcare assistance. We have so many issues that could be solved at the state level that would have a local impact that I just think we're not taking advantage of or not really looking into creatively.
You brought up housing. Do you feel like with the influx of people coming into the Lowcountry, one, we don't have enough housing, but two, they're coming with jobs that are paying higher than what a lot of our in-state jobs are paying. And so they're able to afford houses that people that have worked here and lived here for a long time are no longer able to afford. Is there a policy or a way to help address that disconnect?
Mm-hmm. The first thing I think about is our unique scenario where Charleston, as you said, there are tons of people moving here. There are people that are graduating from here or have lived their entire lives that are looking for jobs that can't afford to live here or can't get those entry-level jobs that will allow them to live here. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that actually has to do with just the makeup of our town, right? So much of it is a peninsula that is difficult to get to because there's only a couple ways in, a couple ways out.
Right.
And therefore, we end up really bad traffic coming downtown, and therefore it's untenable for people to live too far away because they won't be able to get to any jobs that they do inevitably have down here. So much of it comes back to infrastructure dollars and the fact that we need better ways to get into Charleston so that people can live and build communities outside of Charleston and easily get into Charleston for jobs. For instance, we have the CARTA program that's developing now. I forget when it's about to launch, that sort of high-speed bus lanes.
Yeah.
I love that as a first step. I would love to see other programs that come from state funding that work with local legislators, whether that be on the county or local level, to increase infrastructure projects and transportation ease around the area. The other thing I'll say on this is that Charleston really is the engine that makes our state go. We provide the tax revenue and other revenue that keep our institutions funded, they keep our roads paved, the list goes on. I'd like to explore ways that we can harness a lot of that tax dollars and bring it back to our community, back to House District 110, to make it easier to live here for people of all ages, backgrounds, and demographics. There's a lot of work to be done, but I think there are creative ways that it can be done.
And what do you think the biggest difference, or what are some of the primary differences about how Tom Hartnett legislates and how you would legislate?
I try not to get way too political on this, but the fact is, if you look at his voting record, he votes with the party line almost every single time. I'm sure you guys have heard about the Freedom Caucus up in Columbia and how they've much of the time taken hostage of the state legislature by holding up votes, demanding votes on controversial policy, what have you. But if you look at the votes they bring to the floor, whether that be obviously the big ones, abortion, guns, things like that, but others, Tom Hartnett votes with them 90% of the time or something like that. I've seen very little from him that really prioritizes Charleston and the surrounding areas, and specifically House District 110, to address issues such as the livability issue, such as traffic and flooding. And then you combine that again with the ideological stuff, and it's a recipe for disaster. We now live in a state where a woman can't make choices about her own reproductive health, but a teenager can walk down King Street with a gun in his or her hand, and nobody can stop them until that gun is raised. And someone like Tom Hartnett votes on the wrong side of those issues every single time. I think that he would do himself and everybody else a favor if he would forget about the ideological stuff for a moment and really vote according to what his district wants and what his district needs. And that's what I plan to do.
So you feel like there's a disconnect of what people in the district actually want versus what he's doing at the state house?
I do. And I think that there's also a challenge, though, from my perspective, to amplify that a little bit, right? I'd much rather win on my own positives than on going negative on somebody. But the point is, when we're talking about a state legislative House seat, more people are focused on obviously the presidential or even the congressional races. And it's really a lot of people don't, most people aren't, to be fair, I wasn't for the longest, for a long time until I moved back down here. But most people aren't following along every day with what their state legislator is doing. And it's really on me to draw that contrast between Tom Hartnett. And I think as long as I'm able to talk to the people that I need to talk to, then that is everybody in the district. That's what I plan on doing. And I think that will resonate with people.
From an infrastructure standpoint, probably the biggest issue, I would guess, in your district is flooding. And there are a lot of ways to address that. I know downtown they did the Dutch Dialogues, and they're considering putting a wall in and lots of federal dollars could come in that way. Do you feel like there is a way for the legislature and then local governments to really work together to make sure that there's enough money there to ensure that everyone gets flood money? We have big places that are more important probably in the immediate term than others, but mm-hmm. everywhere really does flood.
Regardless of where you are, this either is already an issue or will be very soon. And it affects, even if it's not right outside your front door, everybody's tried to go to the grocery store, work, school, doctor's appointments, what have you, things you right. have to get to that you can't get to because of flooding. I think you hit the nail on the head there, because something that I am trying to convey is I have a breadth of experience working both with federal legislators, federal executives, state decision makers, and local. And I think that there are ways to work in harmony, work in coordination mm-hmm. to really address this issue. I do think at times there are people speaking up about this issue at all levels of government that are not really looking for a solution, but are speaking up to say, hey, I just want to do something on flooding, but they don't really know what that is.
Right.
And I'm here saying that I don't have all of the answers. I don't have many of the answers around flooding, but I do know that if you work intergovernmentally, that is federal government, state government, and local governments, you're going to find a lot more progress towards a solution or to solutions than you are if everybody just works independently. And it's not right. just a money issue. People have to think creatively. We have to get buy-in from people of all different backgrounds, communities specifically. So much of the time we think about flooding, we think about houses downtown flooding and things like that. But really, underserved communities are the most vulnerable to climate change. So really bringing in voices from all different backgrounds to solve this issue will at least get us on the path to a plan to solve it. I think it's going to take generations, but it's coming faster and faster every day.
You mentioned kind of some of your experience. What has prepared you to take on this job as a state legislator?
My career has been rooted in advocating for issues that I believe in. I've led efforts to protect and improve healthcare, fund environmental initiatives, get candidates elected. The list goes on. I really look forward to taking what I've learned from winning policy and public affairs battles outside of Columbia into the state house. I have a career rooted in campaigns and advocacy. For instance, on the healthcare front, I led a state chapter of an organization called Protect Our Care, which in around 2018 to 2020 was dedicated to defending and actually improving the Affordable Care Act against a lot of the Republican onslaughts of attacks. That required bringing a number of different voices across the state together and speaking out against, for instance, every time Lindsey Graham would speak about it or would bring something to the floor, combating that. And then on the environmental side, I led a statewide coalition called the Land and Water Conservation Fund Coalition, which, not to get in the weeds too much about this, is a provision of the Great American Outdoors Act that funds our local parks, waterways, trails, things like that. And it was under threat in 2019. And what we did was a very similar sort of coalition building effort to uplift voices from across the aisle to promote that piece of the legislation. And actually, we ended up getting yes votes from a lot of the Republican legislature and the Democratic congregation here in South Carolina. And it actually passed with flying colors in 2019. Things like that. I'm not a lawyer. I'm just an advocate and a sort of a campaign junkie.
I know that in the Lowcountry, we have had an influx of big companies that bring manufacturing jobs our way. We have some other type gray and white collar jobs that have been coming into the Lowcountry as well. Are we doing enough to engage the gray and white collar companies versus the manufacturing, the Volvos, the Mercedes, the Boeings?
I mean, I think it's a mixed answer here. And I touched on this a little bit before, but I go back to the livability piece of this, which is I lived it after college and saw it with others that I was friends with. Young people and recent college grads are fleeing our city because it's too expensive. And what's one of the reasons that it's too expensive? It's because there are so few good paying jobs for recent college grads. Big money then, people with net worths way above mine, flood the market and you end up with a disjointed economy where things are expensive and people can't afford to live here. I'd love to see programs promoted from our local manufacturing companies. So you can get white and gray collar jobs from the Volvos and the Boeings and all of those, what you think of as the big manufacturers in our state and in our area. So much of those resources right now go to hiring the blue collar jobs. And not that they shouldn't, but I don't think that we create pathways for those large companies to engage our college graduates, our local institutions, I guess, CFC and the Citadel, also from the upstate as well, Clemson, South Carolina, for those white and gray collar jobs that are available and need to be filled. And I just don't think we're seeing enough of that. I didn't see it when I was in college. And when I talk to young people today, they don't feel that engaged by those companies as well. And they end up leaving. I think that's a good path to start on.
And do you feel like we're doing a good enough job throughout the state, given your work on healthcare? There's so many districts in our state that are hospital deserts, childcare deserts. You have to drive for an hour to have a baby. And those are the places that I would argue probably need the big companies to go in, but they would never go there because who's going to want to move there and work there? Is there something that you have in your mind that could help us as a state to get better about that?
Oh, first and foremost is expanded broadband, right? If a lot of these rural areas, if you could get them well connected, then that would begin to solve a lot of the problems right there. We live in a world right now where remote work is a possibility for a lot more jobs than just 5 years ago, just because of the way, obviously, the COVID unfolded, but the way the technology has allowed us to work remotely. So I think if we can promote connectivity throughout our state, I think that solves a lot of issues. And then a lot of the companies then don't need to actually move to a lot of these areas, but then can still provide decent work in a lot of these areas. As for healthcare and hospital deserts and childcare deserts, it's one of the biggest issues. If you just drive through South Carolina, it's remarkable. And I'll add food deserts to that as well. And that's a direct result of the cutting to social safety spending and things like that from our legislature. And it goes back to the legislature being taken hostage by the far right. They, quite frankly, don't prioritize working class people. They don't prioritize those that are coming from underserved backgrounds. And I think that's something that I would love to change, but it's going to take a huge effort and it's going to take more than just electing me. So that's why it's important for voters across the state to engage local elected officials, because they are the ones that are going to make these decisions. Not President Biden and former President Trump aren't going to be the ones that are going to be putting a grocery store in your district or anything like that.
Time for the lightning round. Where you stand on these hot button issues from 1 to 10. Okay. So 1 is you disagree with current legislation or proposed legislation, and 10 is you fully agree. The heartbeat bill, 6-week abortion ban.
0 or negative 10.
School vouchers for all.
For all, I'm a 1.
Constitutional carry.
1.
This is going to be an all-encompassing, but social emotional learning, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Basically, I'm referencing the bill that is limiting what can be taught in schools.
I'm an absolute 1 on this.
Medical marijuana.
I would like medical marijuana to pass, and I would like to go even a step further than having it pass. I would like to have some instances of recreational use available as well.
And last one, how judges are currently chosen through the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
This is an issue where there need to be changes. Mm-hmm. I do believe that the way that we have this currently is not tenable, but the fact is that it's an extremely complicated issue, and I think it'll take some time to work out, but I think I'd probably be a 3 on it right now.
It's been so great to have you on, John Moffitt.
This is Caitlin Brewer. I'm here today with Lizette Cifaldi, who is running for the House of Reps, District 123. Lizette, thank you so much for joining me.
I appreciate you having me.
Lizette, District 123, that is basically Hilton Head down to the Georgia border, then up to Hardeeville, correct?
It's not quite as contiguous as that sounds. It's Hilton Head and Defusky, and there is a very small portion of Jasper County, really the town of Levy, which is getting closer to the Savannah side.
And there's no primary for you. How are you feeling about that?
As a first-time politician, I'm thrilled by that, quite frankly.
And you are running against the incumbent, who is Jeff Bradley. Jeff has been in office since 2014. As a first-time politician, I'm curious, what inspired you to decide to run?
Actually, in 2022, I did a last-minute write-in campaign against Jeff Bradley. Some friends and I watched the South Carolina Senate debate the six-week abortion ban, and it was such a frustrating and angering thing to watch that we sat around and were very dismayed that many of the incumbents had no one running against him, and Jeff Bradley was one of those. And just in a last-minute effort to give people a choice, I did a writing campaign in 2022. And then, of course, I didn't win, was never expecting to, but I did dip my toe into the pool of this whole process, and that made me more comfortable with it. But then when we lost 8 or 9 women in our state legislature that year, we became, at that point, second to only West Virginia for the least amount of women represented in our state house throughout all of the 50 states. And so that made me determined to say that's not acceptable. Women in South Carolina have no voice. And that's why I really decided to make it official this time.
Tell me what you've done in your life that prepares you to be a state legislator.
For one thing, I am a local. I grew up here on Hilton Head, and so I know this community very well. I raised my daughters here. I also am a psychotherapist. I've been helping people heal and transform their lives for 26 years, and at the foundation of that profession is skilled listening and meeting people where they are. And so that's always been a talent of mine, is to really sit and listen to people, connect with them well, and meet with them. From that perspective, I think that makes me ideal to have to be in a state house where I'm going to have to talk to a lot of people, hopefully reach across aisles and get some work done, as well as talking to my constituents and making sure that their voices are heard.
What do you think your district's biggest issue is?
I think my district would probably say that their biggest issue is traffic on the island. We have an issue in the commuting hours in the morning and the evening where we get some pretty bad traffic. And then, of course, over the weekends with the check-ins, because we are a tourist town. And so there are a lot of proposals right now being looked at through the state, as well as this, really the town is leading that charge. And there are some structural things as far as the bridge and as far as some other structural proposals that are being looked at now and how that might affect the communities. I would say that's probably on the minds of most of our residents.
And do you think that traffic and infrastructure is what translates to the biggest issue statewide, or do you think it's something else?
No, I think statewide, the issues that we're dealing with are across the board, and many of the bills that have been passed recently are the exact reason why I'm running: the six-week abortion ban, the open carry laws, now the trans bill that just passed. Those are bills that really are a lot of the motivation for me to step in the ring.
Let's say you're already on to the general election, you have a magic wand, and you walk into the state house day one and can do whatever you want to do to change something. What is it that you're going to change?
This is a magic wand, right?
So it's a magic wand.
Obviously, I would overturn the six-week abortion ban and bring abortion rights back to the women of South Carolina. That would be day one. I'd like to go back to the Roe versus Wade structure that we had set up in our country. I think that was fair. It worked for us for many years. I also would like to overturn the open carry law, because I don't think putting guns in the hands of 18-year-olds without a permit or training and allowing them to open carry those guns even passes the common sense test. Most of law enforcement was very much opposed to that bill. And I think that bill, in the long run, is actually going to make their life harder. It was a bill that was born of lobbying and not of common sense, or even, I think, in terms of listening to constituencies. It was not something that the people of Hilton Head wanted on both sides of the aisle. I have friends that are conservatives and independents as well as Democrats. And I have yet to meet one person that agrees with that bill.
It certainly is something that's bringing us together, which you wouldn't expect, but I am grateful to hear it.
I think for me, the goal really is to get women in the rooms where all these decisions are being made. And right now, we have a state legislature, a state house that does not represent even the gender diversity of this state. We have women make up 51% of this state, and yet they have 11% of our Senate and I think 15% of our House. My main goal is to get women and our voice into rooms where decisions that are affecting us are being made.
I'd love to talk a little bit about South Carolina's economy in general. We've done a really great job as a state of attracting manufacturing jobs, whether it's via tax incentives, et cetera, but we have some pretty significant manufacturing companies in our state. We should also be attracting those institutions and companies that have gray and white collar jobs in addition to those manufacturing jobs. How do you think South Carolina can do a better job bringing a mix of economic investment here to the state?
I think for one thing, they have to make access to the state via our airports easier. Most of the transportation from South Carolina requires connections and more than one connections. And if we were able to get better relationships with airlines whereby we have more direct flights to some of the bigger cities, we'll probably draw in companies because it's not a state that is very enticing for large companies that have employees that travel a lot as a result of their job. I think that would make a difference. As far as bringing those people in too, one of the parts of my district is Levy or parts of Jasper County, and that area is in great need of economic development and really open to that. I think maybe looking into these smaller communities that haven't really been addressed by legislators in the past is a great way to bring in other companies. We've got lots of land and area in South Carolina that needs to be developed and can be developed. I think it's been forgotten by a lot of the representatives that represent those areas right now. That's one of the things that I would do is start to talk to those communities to see what we can build and do. I think the other thing, too, is going to be allowing for tax credits and tax benefits to lure some of those companies in, making sure that we make it tax friendly for them to put their companies here. I think also we have to look at our healthcare system, and with a 6-week abortion ban, that could be a deterrent to companies to want to come in and open this state up to their employees. I don't think there's any one solution. I think it's more of looking at the different doorways that we can go through. And that's the way I personally would approach it.
We're going to talk about some hot button issues that the state legislature has discussed for the last 2-year legislative session. We're going to ask you to respond on a scale of 1 to 10. 1 would be that you fully disagree, and 10 would be that you fully agree with either the legislation that was passed or what's being proposed. The heartbeat bill or 6-week abortion ban, you are a 1.
Yes. Can correct. I say 0?
0, yeah. Sure. What about school vouchers for all?
3. There's a caveat to that. It could have made sense, but it doesn't make sense anymore.
Open carry.
1.
Transgender care banned for minors.
1.
Critical race theory taught in schools.
I think that's a nuanced issue, and I probably don't know as much about it. I'm going to put myself somewhere around a 4, but that's just because of my own ignorance.
Speaking of that, social emotional learning in schools.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
Basically, what it is, it's this idea that you teach how to process things. You teach people to have empathy for other people. Some people look at it as you're making our students too emotional. Other people look at it as it is a way for us to deal with the modern world and everything that's coming at them.
As a therapist, I would have to say 10, because emotional intelligence is one of the best indicators of success in life.
What about term limits for the state house and state senate?
10.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives?
10.
How judges are currently chosen through the Judicial Merit Selection Committee?
1.
Final question, Lizette. When your constituents listen to this podcast, what do you hope the average listener, voter takes away about you?
I think that I care about women and I care about our voice being heard. I care about our state, but overall, it is time that women had a seat at the table in this state, and it's critical, and I am passionate about that, and I hope women know that.
Lizette Cifaldi, running for House of Representatives, District 123. Be sure to share this episode, and we will talk to you again soon.
We are here with Shelley Gay-Uhas, House District 121, the Beaufort-Colleton area. She is running as a Republican in the 2024 primary. Hi, Shelley. Thanks for being on Frogmore Stew.
How are you?
We're great. It's so nice to have you on. Can you tell us a little bit about what is unique about your district?
First of all, I'd like to say that arguably, I think it's one of the most beautiful parts of South Carolina. And I think that we are very fortunate. I'm very fortunate to have been born and raised here in Beaufort County. And I think we have a lot of work to do to protect this beautiful area that we have. The waterways, the landscape, the Ace Basin, so much of this area is just prime for development. And I think that's part of the work that I've been called to do.
And you're seeing a huge influx of people into your district, lots of people moving to that part of South Carolina.
Well, Lowcountry in general, absolutely. Bluffton and Hilton Head, I know Hilton Head, I think, is about maxed out. Bluffton is very busy. It takes one trip over there to see all of the growth. And so to our south, we've seen massive development for obvious reasons. And to the north, we're seeing the same thing, Charleston County. And so here we are, and right in between. And District 121 is actually very diverse in its layout. So can I take a moment and describe to you exactly where District 121 is?
Please, sure, yes.
It starts out on the Sea Islands of Beaufort County. That's Fripp Island, Harbor Island, Hunting Island, and then most of St. Helena Island is in District 121. By and large, it's remained untouched, which is one of the beautiful things about it. The culture and the history there is so rich. And of course, St. Helena Island is bordered by two very important waterways, St. Helena Sound, and then to the south, Port Royal Sound, a deep water port that throughout history, I mean, all the way back to the 1500s, has been very significant in the history of our state and its development. And then the district jumps over Beaufort and then begins again in the area called Burton, a little area that includes one of the most important parts of our area, which is the Marine Corps Air Station, and also Laurel Bay, where many military are housed. So we have a real strong military presence in this district. And then it goes all the way up, crosses over Whale Branch River, goes into Lobico, Seabrook, and then all the way up to Walterboro. And a lot of people don't realize that. It spreads toward Charleston to the Edisto River. The district is really very large, but a lot of it is rural area. So these are families, many of them who live on generational property, generational land that belonged to their ancestors, and they are working hard to preserve that. And I'm very interested in coming alongside those folks to be able to do whatever I can to protect that land, their home sites, their homes, the land that they would like for their children and grandchildren to grow and to live on.
What do you feel like is the most important issue to the people of your district? Is it the conservation and the history of the land, or is there something else that's pressing right now?
I know that for South Carolina in general, the most important issue for South Carolinians is our economy. And of course, the economy is very important. In this district, I believe that we really need to address jobs. And this is actually my story and my husband's story. Born and raised in Beaufort, educated, but there was not a job that was suitable for my husband and I after we were trained in college. So I would say that bringing jobs to this area is close to the top of my list. Now, how do we do that? Three words that are pillars of my campaign: to protect families. I think that's number one. to preserve our area, the beauty of it, the waterways, the history. And number three is to promote smart growth, Grace. I don't think we need industry in the middle of St. Helena Island, but I do know that up close to the I-95 corridor, it is ripe for development, and Colleton County is working very hard to bring industry to their area. And as I've been talking to leaders and nonprofits, it seems like this district has been overlooked and underserved. And again, you can look to the other areas of the Lowcountry that are thriving, but this particular area, there are a lot of folks that are struggling. And my motivation for entering into this campaign is that I deeply care for people.
And so you're running as a Republican against an incumbent, Michael Rivers, who's a Democrat. He's been in the seat since 2016. So you don't have a primary campaign. You are the Republican who will be on the ticket. Is there something that you feel like from a statewide job you would be able to do when you got to Columbia?
Again, I'm very focused on District 121, and I know you understand that. So I'm very passionate about protecting this area while we experience smart growth. Development is coming. There's not a day in Beaufort County, and I would say Colleton too, where developers aren't knocking on the door of regular citizens saying, we would like to buy your property. But there is a responsible way to do that, Grace, and I'm 100% behind that. And I think our conservation nonprofits are doing great work. And just almost every week, there's an article in the paper where more land is being placed in conservation. So there aren't 20 houses on 2 acres, but there is one house for every 3 acres, for example. I think this is important. And I think that this is a statewide mission. And I really want to come alongside the folks who are already doing that in conservation and bringing jobs to areas that need jobs. Now, for those jobs, people need to be educated. So we've got to work on our educational link to make sure that we have the resources for the vocational schools, for training for high school students. I would even say, just while we're talking about education, some training on personal finance. I think that our high school students need to learn how to manage their finances because, again, a lot of them finish college and get jobs, but they haven't been trained in what to do with the money that they're making.
What do you think in your experience has driven you to run for office at this point in your life?
My parents, I have to look back to them. My dad always served the community. He passed away 8 years ago, but he was a leader. He was in government. My mother was in school nursing, so she was in the schools every day. As a school nurse, you see families that are struggling. And so that taught me from a young age that we have to help each other. So as a young adult and a mother, I worked with the Lowcountry Food Bank. And the last 10 years, I was involved as a member of the board of directors.
If you had a magic wand on your first day in office, what is one policy that you would just immediately change?
Say better access to vocational training for young people who are finishing high school. Right now in Colleton County, where they receive training at Technical College of the Lowcountry in Beaufort. So they have campuses in Beaufort and Bluffton. And that's an hour and a half drive from Walterboro. Helping to gain access for education is one of the things that I would like to work on right away. Not everybody is meant to go to college. And so vocational training is very important. Jobs like plumbing and HVAC, electricians, those are great jobs. And young people, if they're suitable for that type of work, can get trained and enter into a job, get skills, and eventually start their own company. And that's how you build wealth. And I believe that that's possible for every person in this district.
Okay, so now we're going to do what we call the lightning round, which is where you stand on these hot button issues. It's 1 to 10. 1 is if you disagree with the current legislation or proposed legislation. And 10 is that you fully agree with the legislation we have in place or proposed legislation. So number 1 is medical marijuana.
I would say 4.
Lawyer legislators on the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
I would say 5.
Critical race theory and diversity, equity, inclusion being taught in schools, the bill that limits what teachers can teach.
5.
The heartbeat bill, 6-week abortion ban.
I would say 8.
School vouchers for all.
I would say 9.
The constitutional carry, open carry.
I'll say 10.
This is my last question. If we talk to your best friend, what is one thing that they would tell us that is funny that we should know about you?
Something funny. Gosh, I have a friend that says, Shelly, you can't swing a dead cat in this area without hitting a cousin. And that's true. My family goes way back in this area. So the joke is, I have so many cousins, I had to go outside of the district to find me a husband, Grace.
Good job, Shelly.
Thank you.
I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep.
Frogmore Stew Meal Prep is a podcast series presented to help you be a more informed voter for South Carolina. We encourage you to verify your voter information and see a sample ballot for your district online at scvotes.gov. Frogmore Stew Meal Prep is hosted by Grace Cowan and Caitlin Brewer, with editing and IT support by Eric Johnson. Produced by TJ Phillips for the Podcast Solutions Network.